Welcome and thank you for joining us on our This Week in State Tax podcast. My name is Harley Duncan, and I'm with the state and local team in KPMG's Washington National Tax Office. On today's podcast, we're going to take a dive into the state indirect taxation of digital products and services. As states strive to maintain the vitality of their sales taxes in the wake of a growing digital economy, they are increasingly enacting measures to impose their sales tax or some other indirect tax on certain categories of digital products and services. Today, we're going to take a look at what is happening across the states in this area. We'll take a look at the taxation of traditional digital products and services, receipts from digital advertising services, the taxation of social media platforms, and we'll finish off on the recreational side with some recent activity in the taxation of prediction market operators and fantasy sports operators. Our tour guide through this morass is Jeff Cook. Jeff's the managing director at our KPMG Washington National Tax State and Local Group. He is our go-to person in indirect taxes and digital services and is one of our state tax resource network specialists for Kansas, his home state. Like me, Jeff shares a fondness for indirect taxation and Kansas University basketball. Rock Chalk Jayhawk, Jeff, and welcome.
Thank you, Harley, and Rock Chalk.
Rock Chalk. Let's start with the easy stuff, like digital products that at the beginning were electronically downloaded versions of books, movies, and music that were really seen as substitutes for otherwise taxable, tangible personal property in most states. But it's morphed over time, encompassing streaming services as well as a host of software-related transactions. Briefly, Jeff, what's the lay of the land in this area?
Yeah, Harley, it's really interesting because I think you could bucket things into what we would consider traditional digital products, as you mentioned, where you think of something that has a digital equivalent, digital movies, digital music, and then the offline equivalent would obviously be the tangible thing that you can touch and feel and used to be able to go into a store and buy. And so I think as the states saw that the internet was expanding, e-commerce was expanding, they wanted to make sure that they were taxing these digital equivalents. They defined them as digital products, covered digital music, digital audiovisual works, and digital books, typically. And so now we're at a place where I'd say there's over 20 some states that tax these digital products in that traditional definition. But what's happened is that a lot of states have expanded their understanding or their definition or what's in the scope of digital products. Streamlined sales and use tax provided a helpful framework and more of a standard definition around digital products where they would think of that definition that I laid out, but non-streamlined states, which there's a significant number of them, would look at the things like software as a service, for example, or cryptocurrency streaming, and may consider those types of products to be also a type of digital product. So we have the streamlined states on one hand with their traditional definitions. We have non-streamlined states who are taking a closer look at digital products and may have a more expansive definition. So we have all these things on the margin, like video game items, cryptocurrency, streamed educational courses, SaaS, for example, that states may consider a type of digital product, depending on what state you're dealing with. So I guess I would sum it up as we're seeing some blurring around the lines about what constitutes a digital product.
It's somewhat of a testament to the Streamline Project because it was a big state and industry project, and the industry had really two prerequisites. A, you must allow the state to choose to tax the product or not to tax it, and you need to be specific in your definitions so that we know what we're dealing with. You're exactly right. We've sort of moved away from this, and we're just seeing lists of things that are considered a digital product without the significantly precise definitions that we once had.
I think also as we see states that may be facing budgetary pressures, I think they're going to start looking at digital products, digital services, if they're not already taxing them. So I think we'll continue to see this blurring of the lines and considering things that we may not expect to be a type of digital product or service being pulled into being taxed by states looking for revenue.
Let's move into a newer, bit more complex area of taxing receipts from digital advertising. I think we're all familiar with what digital advertising is. You can hardly read or scroll through anything anymore without encountering digital advertising trying to interest you in whatever you most recently bought or viewed online. We also hear a lot of proposals to tax digital advertising. What's really happening in the legislative arena here, Jeff? Is this smoke or is there fire there?
I think it maybe started a little bit as smoke, and now we're starting to see some sparks more, is how I would describe it. Maryland was the first state to tax digital advertising. As you know, that law was enacted actually in 2021, went into effect in 2022, and it almost immediately resulted in litigation that has been dragging on for a number of years. And I think that that litigation may have at first dissuaded some other states from enacting the same type of tax as Maryland. We saw a lot of proposed bills, but we didn't really see any states following through on enacting these taxes. But I think we're at a tipping point now where we have seen some states decide that they want to just go ahead. They want to impose their taxes on digital advertising despite this threat of litigation. And we've seen several states actually enact their own version of a digital advertising tax now. I would point out Washington, which expanded their sales and use tax to tax digital advertising. Utah just recently enacted a targeted advertising tax. And Chicago recently this year enacted their social media amusement tax. So have some different varieties there, gross receipts or excise tax. We have expanding the sales tax base to include digital advertising. We have social media. And then another proposal that's been floating around out there has been a data excise tax, or almost a severance tax, where the idea would be to tax entities that mine a state resource. And in this case, that state resource would be the state residents' data. And if you monetize that, then you should pay a severance tax on that data that you mine.
So you mentioned two types of taxes. I mean, we've had the gross receipts. And if I recall, Maryland is an example here where they have brackets based on global receipts of the taxpayer and a rate that moves from a low rate up to as high as 10% or more. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then Washington State, we just have the straight sales tax application to digital advertising. And then in Utah, we've got a special excise tax that looks like a sales tax, but it's got a different rate.
Yeah, I mean, that's right, Harley. All of these taxes, though, ultimately are going after, I would say, a small subset of companies that one of their main revenue sources is digital advertising. There's a feeling that these revenue sources aren't being adequately taxed, and that's causing these states to look at these different tax types. And I don't know that a leading contender has emerged about what states are going to do going forward, because we've seen some different types of approaches at this point.
Each of these has to have some sort of apportionment approach, right? I mean, state can only tax people that view the advertising in their state, right? So they just have to take total receipts, and I have to know where the ad is viewed if I'm a taxpayer.
Sourcing is really the trickiest question about how do we get these taxes right and how do we make sure that a company is paying their fair share. And the way that states have looked at it thus far is that they've sourced or apportioned the tax based on the device location where somebody is viewing the advertisement. But that's not necessarily easy for a taxpayer to determine. They may not have access to all of that data. There may be privacy issues. There may be things like VPN that makes understanding where a device is located hard to measure or source appropriately. So I don't think that it's an easy question for a taxpayer to resolve, and they may have to ultimately fall back on some sort of proxy or other information that they have at their disposal to figure out, how do I apportion this appropriately? And then the question is, well, will the state accept and agree with that?
The volume of digital advertising we see and the volume of internet users across the globe, it's a little hard to believe that you could actually look at it on a transaction basis. You mentioned the litigation, and necessarily it's probably suppressed some of the enactments, but it hasn't dissuaded everyone. You bring us up to date on the litigation and where it stands and the thrust of it?
The main litigation that I mentioned revolved around the state of Maryland and their digital advertising tax. There were challenges that were levied at both the federal and the state level. At the federal level, it eventually got narrowed down to the issue of the pass-through prohibition in the tax, which was a provision of the tax that said taxpayers could not separately state the digital advertising tax on their bills to their consumers. And that prohibition was ultimately struck down by the federal courts as a First Amendment violation. So that leaves the state courts considering the rest of the merits of the tax and the validity. There have been challenges there at the state court level based on Commerce Clause, as well as the Internet Tax Freedom Act, and whether this represents a discriminatory tax under the ITFA definition. And so that litigation is still pending. It is with the Maryland Tax Court. So we're waiting to see how that resolves. We've been waiting for a while now, and hopefully we'll be getting a decision soon, but we don't have a decision yet. As far as other taxes and the other states and jurisdictions I mentioned, there have been other lawsuits that have been filed in some of those jurisdictions as well, mostly by different advocacy groups challenging, again, Commerce Clause, Internet Tax Freedom Act are the two main bases for the challenges.
All right. You mentioned social media taxes, and for those that are deeply interested, we did a podcast earlier this year with Drew Olson, our Chicago specialist, on the newly enacted Chicago social media amusement tax that Jeff mentioned. But how about just a quick word on how that differs from a digital advertising tax? And then as we see other states approach this and their data excise taxes or data mining taxes, should they expect to see the same amount, same type of litigation?
I would think so, Harley. I think that there would likely be some challenges in any state that enacts a social media tax that may be similar to what we've seen in Maryland. I would differentiate the social media taxes because they are clearly focused on not just digital advertising. I would say they're more narrowly focused on social media platforms, and they have a definition of what a social media platform or business is. And I think it's very important to understand what that definition is and what any exclusions are from that definition. So Chicago, they have a specific definition where they may exclude certain websites or other businesses that may have some sort of interactivity or chat feature. That doesn't necessarily make you a social media platform, but you need to scrutinize that and understand the definition in order to determine whether or not I am a social media business and I may be subject to this tax. So I would describe the digital advertising as a broader focus, social media tax, maybe a more narrow focus, but you still need to understand the definitions.
Yeah, if I recall, the Chicago social media tax is based on, it's really kind of a flat fee per user in the jurisdiction. Is that right?
That's right, Harley. Starting above a certain number of users, I think it may have been like 100,000, the tax starts to apply at that level.
Let's go over to something more fun, like prediction markets and fantasy sports betting. Lately, the last couple of weeks only, we've seen a few states either enact or begin to push forward with taxes on prediction markets and the operators there and fantasy sports operators. What's going on in this area, Jeff?
States are looking at daily fantasy sports as a potential revenue source. We're a few years now past the U.S. Supreme Court decision, which allowed states to tax online gaming as well as daily fantasy sports. And we have over 20 states that already currently tax daily fantasy sports. And it's been a good source of revenue for those states. This year, we've seen Virginia and Kentucky most recently enact some new taxes on a daily fantasy sports operators' revenue. So I think we'll continue to see some interest in states enacting tax on that type of platform. And then we have this new thing with prediction markets, which I think is interesting. There are a few big operators in the prediction markets, and I think states view that more as a threat to their gaming tax revenue. Prediction markets are a little bit different. They involve event contracts, which the payoff depends on a specific, objectively measurable binary event. And it could involve not just sports, but also other types of events, such as election results or cryptocurrency values or something along those lines. But we saw Kentucky become the first state this year to enact an excise tax imposed on prediction market operators, and that would take effect next year, although there is some other controversy surrounding the regulation of prediction markets.
Jeff, thanks very much for joining us. That's a lot of activity. Life will never get dull. I mentioned at the outset that Jeff is a fan of Kansas University Jayhawk basketball. If you're not familiar, the Jayhawk is that mythical bird mascot with a dark blue body, a bright yellow beak, and a big red comb. Very, very handsome. The term Jayhawk originated most likely in the bloody Kansas days of the 1850s and 1860s, when a group of anti-slavery Kansans would raid into Missouri and steal cattle and other property from Missouri-based slaveholders. They weren't all necessarily really highly principled individuals, and they frankly stole from a lot of people. But they did also battle with Quantrell's raiders when that group came over from Missouri. But anyway, it stuck with the Kansas University basketball team. Jeff and I exchanged rock chalks at the beginning. The cheer of Rock Chalk Jayhawk was originally the cheer of a KU science club, before becoming the chant that echoes throughout Allen Fieldhouse, the storied KU basketball arena that opened 70 years ago. Thank you very much for joining us on our podcast. We look forward to doing future ones.
Thanks, Harley.